The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, and today we're going to look at what has happened so far in Giants training camp and preview Thursday's preseason opener. And here to help me do that is Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan and CBS Sports. Em, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Ed. Always a pleasure talking ball with you, man.
Hey, and you know, you've been at camp this year just about as much as I have, and that's a change. It's a little different this year. It's nice to see you out there almost every day.
I know, man. It feels good, man. It feels normal, and you know, it's good to be out there because, again, as many people don't know, I do cover college football during the season and also do a lot of extensive draft work. So if you're a draft analyst and you can't get to a practice, you really need to do so, because it really does put in perspective, when you're watching college prospects, what actually works at the NFL level when you're standing there on the sideline looking at NFL players all day long.
And, you know, another thing that you bring up, you know, seeing things with your own eyes and putting things into perspective, and what it makes me think about this year, specifically with the Giants, is watching Daniel Jones and watching this offense. And I know there are a ton of questions about Jones and whether the Giants will decide he's their guy going forward this year. And I know Giants fans have freaked out when they've seen me report things like Jones going 4-for-13 on a given day in 11-on-11. And the other day, I think Monday, he went 5-for-16 and threw a couple of picks. And I think it's important to put all of this in context. You know, Mike Kafka's talked about it. Shea Tierney, the quarterback's coach, said yesterday that right now the Giants are about process over results, because a lot of what's happening, they're seeing guys run routes for the first time. They're seeing defensive looks for the first time. They're installing a new scheme. So a lot of things that are happening are maybe because it's the first time they've done them. So I think it's important for everybody to put in context that, you know, don't freak out when you see 5-for-16, you know, in the second week of training camp.
Well, that's why I don't particularly take stats during practice, because I remember vividly, it was funny. It was one day, it was last week, where Coach Daboll does what he does best. And I love that about him, that he's telling you what the practice situation is before we go out there and practice. He said, hey, today we're working on third and long. And I remember during stretch period, I'm standing next to Patty, good friend of ours. I was like, Patty, I'm not even worried about the end result today, you know, in terms of touchdowns or interceptions. If they're practicing third long, I just want to see the decisions and where he's going with the ball. And, you know, is he throwing toward the sticks, or is he throwing close enough to the sticks where guys can, if it was a real game, make a play and get the first down? I don't care the intercepts and whatnot. And it just so happens that day he threw two bad interceptions. And he completed a lot of, you know, that was a day where everyone tweeted out he's on fire. He had the two touchdowns, two picks, 13-17. But a lot of those passes were 8 yards, 7 yards, 9 yards, like that, on 3rd and 15. And the following day, Patty asked a question about what he's trying to ascertain from that drill, from that those situations. And he said exactly what I said the day before at practice, that, you know, we were more, yeah, the completions and stuff like that are fine, but we're looking at the process. And so that's why a lot of what you see at practice and understanding how our practices run, you kind of know what's the real takeaway, what's not the real takeaway. A lot of times you see fans tend to be focused on the end result. And a lot of times you see maybe some, you know, some beat writers maybe not familiar with what practice is supposed to be, and they're focused on the end result, which is why you see the stat taking and stuff like that. But yeah, he went 13-17, but you want to see him attack the sticks. That's the purpose of the drill. But that, I'm like you, at the end of the day, if you're there at practice, and I'm glad the fans are allowed to be at practice because they can now see what we're seeing. And so I feel like there's a lot of vitriol thrown at the beat writers' way when they report stuff, but these fans are out there seeing the same things too. So now they can understand the job of the beat writer and what we're actually reporting on and what is actually happening at practice.
Right. And we don't always have all of the context either, because we, you know, we see an incompletion and, you know, part of our job on a day-to-day basis is, okay, we do give you the number, but we also try to give you the context. But we don't always know, you know, what a quarterback is being told. And Brian Daboll has said, look, you know, I'm telling these guys sometimes to go ahead and throw the ball just to see how the coverage reacts, or just to see how the receiver reacts, you know, whether we think that's a thing we would do in a game or not, just go ahead and throw it. And as Shea Tierney, the quarterback's coach, said, you know, yesterday when assistant coaches met with the media, he said, you know, we're about process over results right now. We're about, you know, whether the pass is completed or incomplete, we're about compiling the information so that we can go back and talk about it and get on the same page as we learn this offense. So right now, those completion numbers don't mean a whole lot. I mean, they will obviously when you get to week one and as this offense develops, but right now, it's about these guys just getting on the same page and learning this offense and learning each other.
Yeah, and a classic example was the throw everyone talked about, Daniel Jones throwing to Galladay. Now, we talked about this too, Ed. There's multiple ways you could look at that, and it's all about perspective. And again, without knowing exactly what was said or done on that play, there's a couple of ways. And you know, you could look at it and say, hey, that really wasn't a great route by Galladay. He probably should have, you know, pushed up vertical a little bit more, stemmed up the defensive back before snapping off his route. And he probably should have snapped it off working outside instead of curling inside to then go outside. You could also look at it from the perspective, like, why didn't Daniel Jones give his guy a chance to make a play? You could also look at it like Daniel Jones is clearly seeing that this guy was covered and threw the ball away. And you could look at it and say, well, why he didn't hit the check down right in front of him. But when you look at it from a different perspective, you could say, well, he clearly opened up to Galladay's side. So from my perspective, it looked as though it was a called play to Galladay. So that's why he went that way, saw Galladay was covered, threw it out of bounds. So, but that's the difference of having perspective. And when you ask those questions on what happened on this play, it's not necessarily about why did the ball end up where it did, or it's more about, you know, what was the call, what the thought process was, and can you explain what we saw, because maybe we're seeing this thing differently.
Right. So it's just important to keep everything in perspective, you know, as you see these numbers and as you see these, I mean, it's a work in progress. It's practice, it's training camp, it's a time to develop. So that, I mean, the bottom line is just keep it in perspective and don't freak out about the numbers.
I will say this though, Ed. I will jump in and say this. It's the reason, you know, if Daniel Jones had played well his first 3 years, these numbers wouldn't matter, you know, that people see at practice. I feel like when, because you'll see people say, oh, Drew Brees threw picks at practice and Mahomes threw picks at practice. Yeah, it's about earning that leeway, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're Daniel Jones, it's tough for him to have those days because it just harkens back to, well, he's just, this is just who he is. You know what I mean?
Right, right. You know, but the thing that I've said is, look, we're not going to learn. We're not going to learn what Daniel Jones' future is until we get to regular season games, though.
Right. And I remember I said that, I don't know if I said this to you or someone else I was talking to at practice. You're going against your defense, right, who also knows your offense. And I said this in regards to the second Darnay Holmes interception in the flat against Daniel Jones. The second it happened, everybody was, you know, a lot of people were groaning like, oh, he threw another pick six to Darnay Holmes. I'm like, wait a minute. That looked like the same interception 2 days earlier. They ran the same play. So, and being a part of being a former college football player playing at, you know, in practice, you know, certain formations and certain tips off the defense is like, they start at some point in camp, they start to cheat. It's right. Like, bro, you know what play is coming. That's why you jump the route. Because you don't find it odd that this the same dude caught the same type of interception. So that's second pick, I was like, oh, he clearly probably is cheating. You know what I'm saying? But so I didn't knock him too much for that one because I knew that was a situation where defensive players know your own offense and, you know, was trying to make a play at practice and kind of cheated that way.
Hey, let's move off Jones a little bit. I quickly want to ask you about the fight the other day. I had two quick thoughts that I put in a video on YouTube that, you know, that came from the fight. The first thought was, and I'll ask you about this, because I'm guessing as a former college football player, maybe you've been involved in a practice scrum or two yourself, but my first thought was, why on God's green earth do NFL players throw punches at guys in full pads and with their helmets on?
It's the confidence of the quarterback with the red jersey out there scrambling. Like, bro, you know we can't tackle you. You know you're not going to get hit. So stop trying to be Vic out here. You know what I'm saying? And when someone is throwing a punch against someone with a helmet on, it's like, bro, come on. You know you're not going to inflict pain on anybody. Like, what are you doing? You're just trying to show that you're tough. You know, I just found that I was laughing the whole time. I was standing right next to you, Ed. I was laughing the whole time because I know how these things go down. It's like, okay, it's day 9 of practice. It's hot as hell out here. We know coach don't like fighting at practice. So if we fight, we could get a chance to steal away a period or two. You know, but you know he's gonna call us up. Gonna take about 8 minutes to explain. This is not who we are. This is what we do. Blah, blah, blah. But at least we get an 8 minute break. You know what I'm saying? We get to get some water. So who's gonna start the fight today? He kind of negotiate that in practice. Because remember, if you remember how everything went down, you know, it started with Saquon's running over the DB. Then the next play, they tackled the guy to the ground. Then the next play, you see Phyllis, you see Cam Brown going at it, you know, and off to the side, outside of the big skirmish, you have Adoree Jackson and Ricky Pearl Jr. shadow boxing with each other, like fake fighting. So it's like, bro, this is clearly one of those situations where we're trying to stop practicing because it's hot. We want to take a break. That's why I was laughing the whole time, because these things happen all the time at a football practice.
I did enjoy the fact that, you know, when you watch enough practices, you understood that sooner or later there was going to be an offensive player who took a shot at Aaron Robinson, because since like day 2 of camp, when guys were in shorts and t-shirts, Aaron Robinson has been knocking guys down and taking guys to the ground and getting yelled at by Brian Daboll for being too aggressive down the field. And you just had to know that sooner or later somebody was gonna pop the kid.
You know who else is like that, man? Because this, I missed a step, because all right, we saw Robinson get run over in a clearly a third period, but Saquon was like, nah, I'm about to beat Herschel Walker and run right. But in between that, and this is a dude that's like team instigator, to be completely honest, because he's always involved. Dexter Lawrence was power driving somebody in the ground in between the play where Brightwell got thrown to the ground. So it was like, okay, it's ratcheted up. And it's usually the same. It's Robinson picking with the receivers, or it's Dexter Lawrence going above and beyond the whistle and driving some offensive lineman into the ground.
Yeah, I also knew where we were headed. The play after Barkley, as soon as, like, I think it was Antonio Williams was in at running back, and you know, Tay Crowder basically body slammed him into the ground, and I'm like, okay, here we go. This is gonna get good.
It's always funny, but I wish someone would have got the video of Adoree Jackson and Ricky Pearl Jr. shadow boxing. I was like, man, they are clearly out 5 yards outside of the pile, fake like they're fighting 1-on-1. It's hilarious.
Yep. Always fun. Training camp fights, you just cross your fingers and hope nobody gets hurt. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Thursday night, about the preseason opener and sort of expectations for that. And the first thing that I'm going to ask you is, think back to last year, the way that the Giants handled the preseason. Most of their starting guys, most of their frontline guys didn't see the field in the first two preseason games. I, for one, am really, really glad that Brian Daboll is playing everybody. I mean, he'll play these guys. Guys will play really limited snaps on Thursday night, you know, the frontline guys. But I'm glad that these guys are going to get some snaps. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Well, you know, I'm not as surprised, because you know how it is with new staff, new regime, got to come in. You know, got to prove that you are a guy, blah, blah, blah. You're breaking in a new system. So you kind of want to see how guys function. So I'm not as surprised. I would be shocked that they go past a, you know, two series. I know Philly is playing their guys two series. You know, so it'll be interesting to see new coaching staff and how much they play. And it'll be interesting to see the, you know, how much truly we see from a guy like Tyrod Taylor. You know, would you rather him get, like, you know, two series, or you don't want to see him play, you know, a bulk of the snaps? You kind of want to see Davis Webb get out there and get like 3.5 quarters of work, you know?
Right. Yeah. I just feel like, you know, if you're an established team or, you know, an established player, like Aaron Rodgers came out the other day and said it was useless for him to play in the preseason games. And I get that, but there's nothing established about the New York Giants at this point. They're, you know, we've talked about they're building a new offense. I think they can use the snaps. They can use the information, even if it's from a half a dozen plays. You know, and they can use the bump a little bit too, you know, that they get from some live contact. So I'm glad to see Daboll putting his guys out there.
And I watched Hard Knocks the other day, and I'm glad Coach Campbell brought this up, because I feel like we've talked about this before. First day of training camp, they were in full pads and they were going live. And, you know, and he said, listen, man, the studies have shown, you know, live contact gets you ready for the season and also helps prevent injuries, which we said, since they've cut back on all of these equipment days and, you know, padded practices, we probably have seen more guys get hurt in the regular season than we have seen before, when everything was like, you know, before, you know, when 2-a-days were a thing, then when you had the full scrimmage practices against another team. And when they went away from that, we see more guys get injured within the first 3 weeks of the season because of those, you know, they haven't been hitting or getting used to football contact all throughout the spring and summer. So I'm like you, I do agree that putting guys out there, having them go live, you know, albeit for two series, makes a world of difference. Even some guys that you're trying to protect, like a Saquon Barkley.
Right. There's a, I think there's a line somewhere between the way they do it now and the way they used to do it with two-a-days in full pads and all of that. So, but maybe someday we'll get there.
Right. Exactly.
So, hey, let's talk a little bit about, you know, I do at Big Blue View every week. I do, you know, risers and fallers and guys that have had good weeks and guys that, you know, that look like they might be falling behind in competitions for roster spots. I want to ask you, you know, heading into Thursday night, who are some guys, A, that you really want to see, and B, guys who really need to show up in the preseason to grab spots on this 53-man roster? If you want to take those, if you want to take those separately, we can do that.
That's a great question, Ed, because when you being at practice like you've been and I've been, I'm excited to see Robert Foster and how he's able to do in these, you know, game situations. You know, we've seen him be able to stack and track a DB all throughout the training camp practice. He's been able to get open, you know, and he's been working mostly with Tyrod Taylor. So he's been finding him going deep down the field. You like to see Colin Johnson's continue to, you know, progress in the right direction. I truly feel like he is Kenny Galladay light, you know, in terms of size and what he can do, can play outside, can be that big slot over the middle of the field as well. I'm looking at those two from a receiver position defensively, and this is not necessarily a guy that's standing out, but it's something that I'm very intrigued to watch. I feel like the Giants are strong on the edges, but I feel like there is a question depth-wise at defensive tackle. So outside of, you know, Dexter Lawrence and, you know, I know Jalen Holmes been getting a lot of reps, but you want to see how the rotation is filling out for these guys at the interior defensive tackle spot. I know Williams is considered a D tackle. He's more of a five tech, a DN type. So defensive tackle to me seems to be a little bit of a thin spot for the Giants. Outside of Ward, Lawrence, and Williams, you kind of want to see how that plays itself out throughout the preseason.
Sure. And it's in all honesty, it's very, very difficult to judge. You know, even when we're watching these padded practices, it's very, very difficult in 11-on-11 circumstances to really focus on the interior, on these guys, you know, that you're talking about on, you know, say from guard to guard, the play in there. You can see if it's on your side of the field, you get a good look maybe at the offensive tackle versus the edge rusher, you know, that's on your side of the field as you're watching from the sideline. But it's a big scrum out there, man. And it's insanely difficult to judge, to really get an impression of which guards are playing well, which centers are playing well, unless they're snapping the ball over the quarterback's head, and who's doing what at, you know, on the defensive interior. So the games are huge in that aspect.
And that's why when I'm, let's pull back the curtain a little bit, when I go and scout college games, and you know, 9 times out of 10, you go in there for a specific player, right? And so, you know, you're going to watch that player, but you're also kind of building, you know, a running log of seniors that are also capable of playing pro ball or rising juniors, right? So in order to not overwhelm yourself, and this is what the approach I'll take during preseason games, you want to watch certain position groups each series. So let's say this series, I'm watching the guy I came to see, right? And then the next series, I'm going to watch O-line versus D-line. Next series, I'm going to watch receivers versus DBs and so on and so forth before I go back to the guy that I want to see. Because normally the guy you're going to see is going to make plays regardless, right? He's going to stand out. So you just want to see, you can take a series or two off from watching him to watch other position groups. And that's, I think, the best way to approach preseason until you get the film, the All 22, where you could go back and watch it afterwards. But while you're watching it live, you tend to want to focus on, don't follow the ball, focus on position groups and see how they compete against the other side.
And even as many years as I've done it, as many years as I've watched practice, it is really, really hard not to focus on on what's happening with the football. Sometimes it's like, even if your intent is, I want to watch this matchup, you know, between this cornerback and this wide receiver, it's really, really hard to train yourself sometimes not to drift to the football.
Right. And it's hard because, again, naturally your eyes follows the football, because you, as human nature, to be outcome based, to see, okay, what happened on that play? The ball went this way. Okay, cool. Because it feels like, because of how football is, you're following the ball. In that sense, it's kind of like how basketball is, where you're constantly following the ball, because he who has the ball is the one that you got to focus on. So football is in a way similar to that. So it is difficult, but you kind of, you know, you just have to train yourself to really be disciplined to focus elsewhere. Otherwise, you're going to get caught missing a lot of what happened. And to your point, vantage point plays a key role at practice. There's no way in hell we could see O-line, D-line from our vantage point, from where we are field level on the side behind the ball. It's tough.
Right. You can, the only thing you can see really is the tackle on your side.
Exactly.
But hey, before I let you go, I want to ask you about two or three of the rookies, and I'm going to stay away from Kayvon Thibodeau. I'm going to stay away from Evan Neal. I'm going to stay away from Wandale Robinson. You know, we've written about those guys a ton at Big Blue View. We've talked about those guys, you know, and they're all having really, really impressive camps. I want to ask you about a couple of the other guys. First thing I want to ask you about is, I know how big of a Marcus McKethan booster you have been, and you know, how bummed were you to see him go down on Friday night at the scrimmage to a season ending torn ACL?
It sucks, man, because him and Azudu were really starring at camp, both guys, you know, whether that was one-on-ones or in team drills in the run game. Like, man, these dudes are really playing well. Now Azudu is still out there, and he's going to get, you know, worked all across the offensive line to build depth. But I was bummed to see McKethan just, you know, lose out, because he had a chance to be that good swing tackle for them this upcoming season, especially with Pert still on the PUP list.
Right. And it's tough. I mean, I wasn't really going to get into this, but you've got McKethan hurt. You know, Dane Belton broke his collarbone, and he'll be back at some point early in the season. And then we saw Andre Miller, the undrafted free agent tight end, you know, broke his forearm the other day. And my guess is he lands on season ending IR. It's really, really unfortunate when you see these young rookies miss this developmental time, you know, because they're basically, whenever they get back out on the field, they're basically back at square one.
Right. And it's the same situation, you know. I've said this about a guy like, let's say, a Sam Darnold, where you're building progress, you're making strides, and then you get hurt. And now you got to restart the clock and go back from ground zero. And these guys are in the same boat, especially for the undrafted guys like Miller, who they really like, you know, so there's a plan for him. But when you think about it, if you're an undrafted guy, you really are against the, you got the eight ball up against you, because, you know, they could easily draft somebody right, and move on from you. So it's just, it's tough. It's sad to see those guys have to go through that, because at the pro level, it's really out of sight, out of mind in terms of, you know, some guys that are hurt, unless you're a star quarterback where they constantly check it up on you and keep you involved. But really, it's out of sight, out of mind. They move on.
Right. You know, if Jeremiah Hall, the other undrafted free agent, who's been working tight end, fullback responsibilities, just like Miller, if he grabs that job, you know, next year you come to training camp and the Giants are going to be like, well, what do we do with this? What do we do with Miller? You know, what do we have him here for?
Right. Exactly. So it's like, man, you know, we like him. You know, he's not fast enough to be a receiver. He's more of the H back tight end type. And who knows? Maybe they draft someone else. It's crazy how quickly it can go from promising to not promising for, you know, these back end roster guys.
Right. One guy I want to ask you about who's been really, really impressive and keeps showing up is Darian Beavers. I keep getting asked about Micah McFadden, the other inside linebacker that the Giants drafted. And my answer to McFadden questions is, look, McFadden, to my eyes, hasn't done anything wrong. It's just that Beavers is the one who keeps flashing. He's the one who keeps ending up in the backfield on running plays. And he's the one who keeps, you know, putting pressure on the quarterbacks and getting, you know, passes defensed. He's the one making the splash plays at this point.
And it tells you he's the better player. And to be completely frank, McFadden kind of looks like a guy out there. Beaver looks like an NFL linebacker. And one of my strengths for him coming out of Cincinnati was how well he does in terms of understanding route concepts. You know what I'm saying? He can match up versus backs, match up versus tight ends, all those good things. But you're seeing him be a significant presence in the run defense department. And coming into training camp, inside linebackers was a place where you wanted to see where the Giants were going to kind of go at that position. And Beavers has kind of played himself into, you know, that conversation that, man, this dude could be a potential starter for them.
It's interesting. You know, I don't think anybody really, you know, picked up on it very much the other day. But it was really interesting that Wink Martindale said that it's Beavers out of all those other linebackers who's actually playing the mic, you know, when he's on the field and Blake Martinez is not, which is, I mean, you know, the safeties are calling the defense, but it's Beavers who's playing that mic backer position, you know, when they're not. When Blake Martinez is on the sideline, which I found interesting. You know, McFadden's not playing there. It's Beavers. So it's clear that the Giants see Beavers as being ahead at that point.
Oh, absolutely. His football IQ and ability to see it on both ends really makes it tough to keep him off the field. And he's making plays on both ends of defense, which is what you want to see from your linebacker, especially in today's game, where if you can't cover, you're not going to be out there. But the fact that you can cover and play the run helps his cause.
All right, Em, I think we'll wrap it up here. I'm curious, you know, what you've got going on these days other than showing up on Giants camp. And I'm curious when we're going to see your mug on TV again in one of your brand new suits.
Hey, listen, I've been on CBS HQ all throughout the week. I'll be on there today and all throughout the week as well. And then after that, we're getting ramped up for the season. So, yeah, you'll be seeing me in these suits pretty soon. I would say September. So you'll see me in these suits starting September 3rd, which is the first weekend of college football. And that's when we start seeing the spring line, the late summer, early fall line come out.
Hey, look, you know, the Giants don't play until 7 o'clock. You got a whole day to shop.
Exactly. Got a whole day to shop. Go to the tailor, get it done right, you know?
There you go. All right, Em, thank you very, very much. Giants fans, thank you as always for listening. Please remember to subscribe to Big Blue View Radio wherever you listen to podcasts. Stay safe out there. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.